Welcome to SCOTUS Cast, Antitrust and Dental Professionals Edition. Thank you for tuning in. On February 25, 2015, the Supreme Court heard oral argument in North Carolina Board of Dental Examiners v. Federal Trade Commission. The question in this case is whether the state action exemption from federal antitrust laws applies to a state dental regulatory board when the majority of board members are dental professionals who are elected by other market participants, and thus potential competitors of anyone seeking entry into the dental industry. The Federal Trade Commission denied immunity to the board, and the Fourth Circuit affirmed that ruling on appeal. By a vote of 6-3, the Supreme Court affirmed the judgment of the Fourth Circuit. Because a controlling number of the board's decision makers are active market participants in the occupation the board regulates, the court explained that the board can invoke state action antitrust immunity only if it was subject to active supervision by the state, and that supervision is lacking here. Justice Kennedy delivered the opinion of the court, which is joined by Chief Justice Roberts and Justices Ginsburg, Breyer, Sotomayor, and Kagan. Justice Alito filed a dissenting opinion, which Justices Scalia and Thomas joined. To discuss the case, we have Professor Alexander Sasha Volokh, who is an Associate Professor of Law at the Emory University School of Law. Professor Volokh received his JD and PhD in economics from Harvard University. As always, the Federalist Society takes no position on particular legal or public policy issues. All expressions of opinion are those of the speaker. And now, Professor Volokh.
So I'm going to be talking about this case, North Carolina State Board of Dental Examiners versus FTC. That's a case, a decision that just came down from the Supreme Court on February 25th, 2015. And this decision is, I think, a moderately important decision in antitrust, but it concerns the very specific area of antitrust doctrine, which is called state action immunity. Now, initially, some of you may be familiar with the concept of state action from constitutional law, where we know that rights apply against state actors but not against private actors. This is a totally different doctrine, and all it shares in common with the constitutional state action doctrine is its name. This is totally different. The state action immunity from antitrust has its genesis in a 1943 case called Parker versus Brown, where the state of California had a very New Deal-style form of agricultural regulation involving agricultural marketing boards that were supposed to limit the supply of agricultural commodities so as to increase the price. There was an independent grower who wanted to challenge that and challenged the California scheme on a variety of grounds, including that the government of California was acting anti-competitively and that violated antitrust law. So in this case, Parker v. Brown in 1943, the Supreme Court said, well, we don't think that the antitrust laws were ever designed to reach state regulatory activity. And so they said that California and the California officials were not going to be liable under antitrust, and this was not even a violation of antitrust because antitrust just didn't extend that far. This was a purely statutory interpretation decision. Congress could extend antitrust law to cover that if it wanted to. Probably in 1890, when antitrust law was first enacted, when the Sherman Act was first enacted, they wouldn't even have thought that this was part of interstate commerce. But of course, in 1943 and ever since then, this is the sort of thing which the Supreme Court does consider interstate commerce. So if Congress wanted to, they could certainly write an antitrust law that would extend that far, but the Supreme Court concluded that it did not extend that far. So since then, state action immunity has been refined in various ways. In particular, when the state allows private individuals to do particular things that might be anti-competitive, and let's suppose that you sue these private individuals for anti-competitive acts under the Sherman Act. So normally, they would be liable for violations of antitrust, but then they might say, oh no, wait a minute, we're state actors because, look, we're just doing what the state is explicitly allowing us or directing us to do. If that's the case, then according to a more recent case called MidCal, there's a two-part test that they're only immune from antitrust law if you can show two things. If you can show that they have clear authorization from the state to do this, And moreover, if you can show that they're being actively supervised by the state. So ever since then, that's been considered this two-prong Mid-Cal test for whether you're immune from antitrust law as a state actor. And there have been a number of exceptions to this two-prong test over the years. One exception is that if you're a municipality, so let's suppose a municipality, which is really just a kind of weird state agency. So suppose a municipality does something anti-competitive and you sue a municipality under antitrust law. The Supreme Court did hold in a case called Town of Hallie that the municipality did have to show the clear authorization prong, but it didn't have to show the active state supervision prong. And basically because the court reasoned that the municipality is kind of political, it's kind of governmental, it kind of lacks private profit-making incentives, so we're not really as concerned that they're going to abuse their power. Now, in a footnote in Hallie, they said, well, it's likely that state agencies would also be thought of under this same rubric, that they would only have to fulfill the first prong of the Mid-Cal test, that is clear articulation and not active state supervision. But that was just a footnote, dictum, and that's been an open question. That's where we get in this case. This case involves the North Carolina State Board of Dental Examiners, which is a state agency. At least it's defined as a state agency under state law. But the state agency is composed almost entirely of active market participants, mostly dentists. And the dentists make up more than majority on the board. And the dentists are not gubernatorial appointees, but they're also elected by other dentists. So they also don't have any political accountability except to their own profession. So you might immediately think, oh, wait a minute, are we possibly suspecting some self-dealing on the part of dentists? The way this case arose is that there's this concept of teeth whitening. You can pick up over-the-counter teeth whitening kits in the supermarket, or you can have very expensive teeth whitening in a dentist's office. But there was this middle ground where you could have non-dentist teeth whiteners, and they would have their storefronts or kiosks in shopping malls, and you could sit down and they would whiten your teeth for you. And so these were not licensed dentists. They didn't go to the Board of Dental Examiners to get a dentistry license, which is what you have to do to actually practice dentistry. And so licensed dentists hated this competition, and the Board of Dental Examiners sent these non-dentist teeth whiteners a series of cease and desist letters saying, your teeth whitening is the practice of dentistry, you're violating the law, stop doing this immediately. And it had the desired effect. They ended up chasing all these guys out of North Carolina. So the Federal Trade Commission, the FTC, federal agency, is one of the agencies that is charged with implementing antitrust law. The DOJ also implements antitrust law, and in addition, antitrust law can be privately enforced. But certainly the FTC does have a role in enforcing antitrust law, and they sued the North Carolina board, saying what you did sending out these cease and desist letters is anti-competitive and violates the Sherman Act. They said, we don't need to worry about that because we are state actors. We're actually a state agency. And the FTC, in their own FTC tribunal, ruled that, no, actually, you don't automatically get state action immunity. You have to show that you have clear articulation from the state. But not only that, but basically we're going to treat you as though you're private actors. So you also have to show active state supervision. And, of course, the state board could not show any active state supervision. And they said that the reason that this was problematic was because you're active market participants. And that means that you have a conflict of interest and that you're really just kind of a glorified set of private actors. And that's why we treat you, for antitrust purposes, the same way that we treat private actors. So this got appealed to the Fourth Circuit, and the Fourth Circuit upheld the FTC's determination, and then it went to the Supreme Court. And the Supreme Court also affirmed. So basically what the Supreme Court said is that what makes the difference between whether you get state action immunity or not, it depends on whether you are exercising the state's sovereign power. So this is a category that this decision says is very important. Either you are exercising the state's sovereign power or you're not. So what does it take to be exercising the state's sovereign power? They said initially that if you're the state legislature itself, or also sometimes you can be the state Supreme Court when you're acting in a legislative capacity. In that case, you're clearly exercising the state sovereign power. And in that case, you automatically, under Parker v. Brown, you get state action immunity. But if you are not exercising the state sovereign power, then the only way that you would get immunity is if the necessary procedures are followed so as to make your decision that of the state. And so the Mid-Cal test is really just an implementation of that, that when you have clear articulation from the state and you have active state supervision, then essentially your act has become the act of the state. So that means that the state sovereign power has been exercised, and so state action immunity exists. Now, the court says that sometimes, you know, sometimes we have not required both parts of the Mid-Cal test, so for example, municipalities, but that's because they're electorally accountable, don't have a private price-fixing agenda. So that's why all you need there is clear authorization. But in this case, we can't make that exception because these people are market participants and they do have a private price-fixing agenda. What's important here is that the court seemed to think that the only important thing was the fact that these dentists were active market participants. They did not think it was important at all that they were electorally accountable only to other dentists. So it seems that this would have come out the same way even if they had been gubernatorial appointees. What's important is that they're active market participants, and so they should be presumed to be looking out basically for their own private interests unless you can show that they're being actively supervised by the state. They also said that the fact that the board is labeled a state agency is irrelevant because what's important is not the formal designation, but the risk that active market participants will pursue private interests. So in other words, it's basically the risk of regulatory capture. And it's a structural risk, and it can be posed by many different sorts of bodies, but especially state agencies controlled by active market participants. That's exactly that sort of risk. So it's not the labeling as a state agency is not going to be determinative. Maybe it's not even relevant. The Supreme Court suggested that this is not the end of the story because maybe the board members themselves might have some sort of immunity from damages for other reasons. They could also be indemnified by the state. Obviously, the state could also just rework how it does its regulatory structure and implement some kind of active supervision by a disinterested actor. The court also suggested that how much active supervision do you need? They said that that's really a contextual and flexible inquiry, and there's no one-size-fits-all necessarily solution, but what they did say is that someone from the state who is not an active market participant has to review the substance, and he has to have the power to veto or modify decisions, and it's not enough to just have potential for state supervision. So, okay, bottom line is this seems like at least a moderately important opinion because this affects a lot of different kinds of agencies. There are many professional oversight organizations that are staffed by active market participants. So presumably some kind of at least moderately fundamental changes might be required to a lot of different agencies. Now, if really the inquiry is what's the risk that agencies are going to be captured by private interests, then that can be a difficult question. And the dissent by Justice Alito is right to point that out, that this is going to lead to a lot of vagueness and future litigation. For example, what if the state just has a state employee actively supervising, but the state employee is also captured by the dentist lobby and ends up rubber stamping? Then, you know, have you really gained anything, or do you have to now ask whether the state employee is also being captured even though he's not an active market participant? We don't really know the answer to that yet. Justice Alito's approach would be to say that you really look at whether the agency is really a state agency, and you can do that by looking at the statutory structure, and it's clear from state law that it really is a state agency. He would say they're directly wielding the sovereign power of the state, and they're absolutely immune from antitrust law. So obviously the majority wouldn't go there, but Justice Alito seems to have more of a bright line, whereas the majority's line is one that can possibly lead to some kind of vagueness in litigation in the future. Also, Justice Alito points out, and this seems correct, that figuring out what it takes for market participants to control the board, what does it take to be a controlling number? Does it have to be a majority? Does it have to be a strong voting bloc or an obstructionist minority or something like that? And what does it take to exactly be an active market participant? What if they just had dentists on the board, but they had to not practice during the 1 year that they were on the board, and then they went back to practice? Would these not be active market participants anymore? That's also a kind of open question that still remains. So, in short, this seems like an opinion that may have a great effect. It's hard to see. It seems like at least it has to have some kind of at least a moderate effect, because many states will have to make at least some kind of changes to their agencies. How much of an effect remains to be seen, and also there are a number of vaguenesses in the opinion that will still have to be hashed out in the lower courts by future litigation.
Thank you for listening to this episode of SCOTUSCast. For more episodes of SCOTUSCast, as well as audio and video of past Federalist Society events, please visit our website at www.federalistsociety.org/multimedia.